And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction Beyond's very own everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Me? I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Hi, and so as you all know, it's the end of June as of this episode, episode 86. Wow, I can't believe it's episode 86 already. And yeah, so Starfinder 2nd Edition's playtest comes out in literally less than 2 months now. We're looking at the month of July and then some change for Gen Con. And like getting some good change for Gen Con, we get to look at a free sample. It was free RPG day last weekend, literally on Saturday the 22nd. And I picked up a copy of Starfinder 2nd Contact, and we're going to go over it because this has all of the latest secrets in handy paperback form. James, where's your copy?
My copy is in your house.
Oh no, I stole it.
Are you asking about the pre-made slides that I have?
They're so good, right? So to go over a little bit about the history of this product, when Starfinder, the first edition first came out, they put out a sampler with the original game for Free RPG Day called Starfinder First Contact. It had a bunch of stat blocks for monsters that would later get reprinted in the Starfinder Alien Archive, the first one.
Yeah.
And that one was very fun. I think the most memorable part of First Contact was that the Sarkeesian sniper rifle did like, what, 1d72 damage or something crazy like
oh,
that?
Oh yeah, it had, it were like 690 or seven. It was a three digit number. It had a wild typo to it.
Yeah, and of course we here at No Direction Beyond love wild typos. They make the world go round.
Yeah, also because it was like a base just species that had flying as like a thing. And that being advertised, a lot of Pathfinder first people were just like, this can't, how do you balance a game where people can be airborne in first level?
Yeah, and the answer is you give everybody guns.
You give everybody a gun. It's easy. It's just that's why ducks don't start nothing anymore.
It's true. And that and dogs. That's the other reason why ducks don't start anything anymore.
I know. The dogs just laugh at them after they pick them up.
Right. So Second Contact is for Second Edition. You know, this is First Contact, but the second time, so it's Second Contact. It's a cute name. I appreciate the nod. I think that the Starfinder team is starting to do a really good job of kind of pulling in those first edition nods, and I like it. Like, this is good, and I'm excited to see what's all in store. Now, granted, I've read all of this, but James,
no, it's not available online for now. I think it's supposed to come out at the end of the month or so.
Yeah, I read like January and you know, just in time for like the actual playtest to start, and then you won't need this anymore.
I mean, there might be stuff in there that's not in there. I think you mean like July, not January, right?
I do. You're right. I do mean January and not July. Gosh, I hope this doesn't come out in January. That will be too long.
But yeah, so I should be able to get a view over it eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, but Alex picked out some sections that he thinks are particularly interesting.
All of them.
That's good. That's good.
It's a very short book. It's in typical Free RPG Day style. It's about 16 pages long. It's got an interior art back cover, and it reprints the Desna's Path Galaxy from this was in a relatively newer book. It was in the travel one. You remember the one we did?
Yeah. The Ports of Call.
Yeah, Ports of Call. So yeah, they reprinted the galaxy map from Ports of Call, which is nice. I appreciate that. I think that when you're trying to sell the scope of a galaxy to players, I think that having things like this mapped out is a good thing. I'm surprised it took us to the end of first edition to get a galactic map, but here we are.
You know, what I want is a globe. Like, it's so, I know it's way too hard to do at any sort of reasonable scale, but just galaxies exist in three dimensions usually, right? Sure. I mean, there are disk galaxies, but they still have three dimensions to them, right?
So what I'm hearing is that you need the Starfinder team to make an actual 3D globe and like put little like pinpoints where things would be.
I need acrylic resin colored like a galaxy filled with beans for points of interest.
Oh my God, Dustin will love that. Dustin's obsessed with beans.
Yeah, beans and acrylic. It's a tale as old as time, or 2000.
2000, indeed. So, speaking of things that are as old as time, there are rules on the first page of this document. Two of them, in fact.
Yeah.
Don't you love rules?
I mean, it depends what they let me do.
Most of this stuff, to be completely honest, is things that seem like they've been just pulled from various field tests. Like there's a reprint of a bunch of spells that appeared with the Mystic, like delete, discharge, holographic creature, holographic object, and recharge weapon. They all read good. One thing I'll say, Starfinder team, if you are listening to this podcast, you need to heighten recharge weapon, because like right now how it works is that you touch a weapon with no remaining ammunition and recharge it with magical energy. The target gains ammunition, gains either ammunition or charges equal to its usage until your next turn, allowing anyone holding the weapon to make one strike with it. This spell only recharges weapons with an ammunition that costs 10 credits or less. Why? Cantrip scale in this edition. Give it a heightened. Be like, yo, it's the level times 10 squared or something. Like, I think if I'm a suitably high level spellcaster, I should be able to put a missile in a bazooka. Yeah. I'm assuming a missile costs more than 10 credits.
Yeah, I mean, but yeah, this is assuming a little bit about the economy there.
That the economy means that I can't magic bazooka bullets into my gun?
The economy might mean that things, ammo in general, costs less than 10 gold. 10 credits.
That would be nice, because some of it got really pricey in Starfinder.
I mean, most of it was, unless it was like heavy or like single use, like disposable, yeah. Like most of your run-of-the-mill ammo was, you know, it was 40 credits for a battery and 80 credits for high capacity, and that was about the same.
I could see, like, if they're doing this because they don't want you to be able to like magically create special ammunition, like, you know, oh man, we really don't want you to be able to put that grappling hook in your gun or whatever. But I feel like this could use some scaling. That is my official feedback on that one spell. The other ones look great. It's fine. Good job. I approve of you. There's also what I really appreciate. James and I were talking about this in our pre-show, and James and I typically don't do a pre-show because all of the good things come out in the pre-show and then they're lost forever on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, we're terrible at that.
Yeah, so it's terribly, we just shut our traps and like hold it all in and burst out the quality content while we're doing the show. But we actually talked for this one because I had to explain to James what a trait was.
Yeah, I figured it out. It's if you've ever played like Warhammer 40K or anything else where things get like traits assigned to them, like Imperium, Eladari, and there's other ones that are more Pathfinder related. But I didn't realize that Pathfinder 2 system gave so much more weight to traits.
Yeah, it's kind of like keywords in Magic the Gathering. It's like a system if you took subtypes and descriptors from first edition and mixed them all together, along with like weapon special properties and rules. Any of those little like descriptor type things that were in first edition Starfinder are now codified and unified as traits, essentially.
Oh.
Yeah, I like it. It's cool. There's one trait that's in this book. It's called the Cosmic Trait. It basically is a trait for creatures that survive in a vacuum. Its effects, like if you have this trait, you basically get the no breath ability and the immunity to cosmic radiation from first edition Starfinder, like, just in this one trait.
Like the androids, like survive in a vacuum trait thing.
Yeah, kind of. I don't think androids will get cosmic because androids, as far as I know, they still get blasted by cosmic radiation. We never tried that with Butters, though, so I can't know for sure.
More testing is required.
Yes. Launch Butters into outer space. But it's good. I like it. It reminds me of something like a, almost like a swarm tree. And it's funny because we'll get back to that in a minute. There's also the glitching condition, which appeared in one of the field test books already. It tells you what happens if you basically, like, it kind of reminds me of a mix of, like, if a glitch gremlin does its terrible glitch gremlin things to you, which is appropriate because glitch gremlins are in this book.
It's in the slideshow.
Yeah, it's in the slideshow. But it's also, like, I suspect that this could be used in Starship Combat, if whatever Starship Combat will look like in second edition. If you want my personal opinion, I'm kind of hoping Starship Combat isn't core and they let the core rules come out first and they put that in later, because I feel like Starship Combat was a very shaky topic for many people in first edition. I wouldn't mind to get the core system out and good and then put that in later, but we'll see. This is also the biggest playtest that you, like the core rulebook playtest for any game is the biggest, most involved playtest. So like if they want feedback on Starship Combat, this might be the time to do it. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Just a thought. I mean,
yeah,
it is maybe something you don't have to put in the standard because You just kind of hand wave it and continue to iterate it, see what people do with that. I mean, you do at least have, this kind of sounds silly coming from first edition, but you probably have naval combat rules in second edition Pathfinder, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So you might have some idea better, as opposed to the first edition Pathfinder rules where nobody used them because they were confusing.
Yeah. The second edition rules are basically, here's a ship as a vehicle, do a regular combat. Like that's at least that's what I've seen. There may be an adventure path that does something more specific, but none of the books that are out yet specifically do naval combat. But there's Guns and Gears has a lot of like vehicles and stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean, in general, most players, when they talk about those things, they don't want to worry about having to pilot something that isn't a personal item.
Yeah.
So it's better. They're just going to just fireball the sails anyway, you know?
True. That's true. And I think that's one of the things that Starship Combat really struggled with and that Mech Combat did so well, that like at the end of the day, a game like Pathfinder is about the players doing cool things and having everyone sit around in a starship, Star Trekking it, kind of isn't that cool.
Yeah.
Like people want to do Star Wars where Luke is like flying through the route on the way to. Yeah, through the trench to shoot the exhaust pipe. They don't want to be Picard going, set lasers to fire, and then waiting 20 minutes for the gun to shoot across a galaxy. You know what I mean?
I mean, I do. There's a VR game, Star Trek Bridge Crew. One day, hope we should get together and play that.
All right. Okay. You know, I will say yes, we will try that. And when we do, we'll do a show where I'll go, guys, fam, I was so wrong. This is the best experience of my life.
I get it now. I see the vision.
You just watch me on screen turn into Danny DeVito. I get it now. So other cool things that are in this opening section. It talks about the two new skills that Starfinder is adding, or at least two of them, ones that are in this book. A computer skill is being added, and a piloting skill is being added. This is important because in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, there is no dedicated like riding or mounting skill. It's just called driver lore. Mm-hmm. It's a lore skill for driving. And in Starfinder, it's like an actual independent skill. And the fun thing that's fun about it is that the first thing it says is that it's used to command mechs, drive vehicles, pilot starships, and navigate. So like, even if mechs aren't going to be core, this skill is clearly being written assuming that mechs will be in the pipe.
That skill is written in the chronology of the most entertaining things to do with that skill.
You're right. Mechs, vehicles, starships, navigate.
Yeah.
That's true. Then there's also the computer skill, which I think everybody knew there was going to be a computer skill.
You need it.
And you need it. And it basically summarizes that it's used for either disabling systems or hacking a computer. So cool. I'm good with that.
It works.
Awesome. Yeah. But that's all the boring stuff. There's also a little paragraph about integrated weapons, but we're going to skip that. That's not entertaining. Let's go to the monsters.
Wait, does it talk to you about going to a Pathfinder 1E setting and using professional computers to hack an abacus? Is it like reverse compatible?
No, it doesn't say that, but I think it should.
These skills need to be reverse compatible.
Listen, an abacus is technically a computer. It's just not a digital or electronic one.
Yeah. It's just a manual keyboard.
Fix the skill, Starfinder teams. He just, and Dustin in chat's like, oh no, all the beats on my abacus. Just imagine going with like the computer skill and just being like, yes, I hacked the system, pull the rod out, it's going falling.
I mean, they're supposed to be compatible systems.
It's true. No, you're not wrong. I guess it's only compatible if you're doing a lot of stuff with like the Silver Mount and like the Technic League.
true.
Yeah. So in total, there's a number of monsters. There's the Asteray, the Crest Eater, that's two, Ferroflu Oid and Glass Serpent for four, Glitch Gremlins and Laser Wolves for six, the Nihili and Squaxes for eight, two swarm monsters for 10. There's a security robot and a cybernetic zombie for a total of 12. However, there are two stat blocks for the security robot, so technically lucky 13.
Oh, that is good.
And I actually think there are two laser wolves and there might be two squaxes. I think there are two squaxes. Yes, there are two squaxes.
One of them laser wolves. It's just so cool. Laser in front of everything is amazing.
It's true. And what's funny to me about them is like they are called, it's called laser, like it's called Laser Wolf Tashtari. And I'm pretty sure in Starfinder they called it Tashtari, and then like Matt Morris wrote into the thing, also known as Laser Wolves. And it's like, no, you gotta swift flip that around. And Thirsty clearly saw that. And it was like, no. Everybody calls them Laser Wolves. Nobody calls them Tashtari.
Exactly. Like some names are just going to take precedence.
Yeah, like Laser Wolf. It's good. let's go over some of these creatures, but we don't have to do them in order. Do you have any favorites among the list that I gave, James?
My favorite is the first one because it's the first one on the slideshow.
Wow, you did it!
Awesome, did it.
So that's the Asterae. I think I said that right.
Yeah.
This is a monster that has been in Starfinder for a while. I think they were in the original Alien Archives, if I remember right. But if I'm wrong, I apologize. There were four of those. I don't remember everything. However, what I do remember is that they were essentially like sirens of like the deep void. Like they would make like fake broadcasts and stuff and try to get you to fly near them so they could get on your ship and kill you. I like that.
I feel like that's so much easier when you can just like beam any sort of data instead of just singing and just kind of being naked on rocks. Like this is, you can beam so much more information this way.
Yeah. Just like listen to some of these abilities that they get. They're really cool. I approve. The first one is called Wake Rider. By touching a starship, an Asterae can bond to the energy wake it leaves as it travels. The Asterae can match speeds with the starship and ride along with it, treating the ship as if it were ground so long as it remains within 100 feet. If the starship enters the drift, the Asterae can choose to accompany it into the drift, or it can disengage as a reaction and remain behind.
That's wild, just to be able to go into the drift.
Yeah, I'm following you. They have a tail whip attack where they whip it, and it does slashing damage. They have an electric blast range attack with a 70-foot range increment. They can just go, pew,
pew. Nice.
Enjoy, yeah. It's very good. It's an electrical attack. They are CR-12 equivalent. So, like, the technical term is level in Starfinder 2nd Edition Pathfinder, but it's the equivalent of, like, a CR system in 1st Edition. It's CR-12. They're nasty, and they'll blast you. They also have this great ability called Sensor Song. As a single action, an Asterae can sing electronic signals that mask or mimic sensor readings. The Asterae creates a false image of an object as if it had cast a fifth rank holographic object. This false reading affects only electronic sensors, but creatures hear odd echoes in the area so long as the effect persists. Multiple Asterae can sing together, doubling the range and area of this holographic object for each Asterae casting the spell in sync. So they can just make you like make your readings wrong. I love it. Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah, just free food over here. Free beer.
Yeah. The last ability they have is called Matter Consumption.
I do that all the time. What do you mean?
You ain't special, Asterae. I consume matter on a daily basis. However, in this case, when it uses this three-action ability, which again, James and I don't need three actions to take a bite of tacos.
It is because I'm messy, but I can do it faster.
The Asterae opens its mouth to suck in the molecules of an adjacent organic creature or object of small size or larger. If the target is an object, including a corpse, the Asterae heals 30 hit points and becomes quickened 1 for the next minute. That means it gets an extra action during its turn.
Wait, can it swallow smaller things just to swallow them?
Probably. I imagine the answer would be yes, but it only gains this benefit if it's smaller or bigger.
Okay. So just a menace.
Yeah. It says if the target is a creature, it takes 10d8 void damage, DC 32 basic fortitude save. Ooh. That means that you roll a saving throw on if you fail, you take the full damage. If you critically fail, which means you fail by 10 or more, you take double damage. If you pass, you take half damage. And if you pass by 10 or more, then you take no damage.
Mm.
That's what basic means as a saving.
Ah.
Yes, I think they're very cool. I approve. They've got like some resistances and weaknesses. The one thing to know about 2nd edition Pathfinder creatures, as well as Starfinder, it looks like creatures don't really get a ton of immunities in this system. It's mostly just resistances or weaknesses. The game would rather give them a bunch of hit points and then say, they take more if you do this, than say, they can never be hurt with this one specific thing. Because you know what's really not fun? Taking your laser rifle, shooting it at a thing, and then watching that your favorite weapon just isn't.
I mean, I think that's just hike up your boots. Time to throw them hands.
You would think that.
Yeah.
I've seen how you play this game.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad thing. Crest Eater. Crest Eaters are classic. They were in the original First Contact. There was one in the third book of Dead Sons, right? Does that sound right?
Yep.
Yeah. So they're basically these big four-legged beasts that are kind of blend reptiles and mammals together. They're from the Kasatha homeworld, Kasath, but they have been spread throughout the cosmos, accompanying numerous Kasathas and even having a small enclave aboard the Adari. So I guess like they just get loose because you fight these things everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, they have a wrong number of limbs, of course, and
oh, they do, just like Kasatha. Everything from Kasath has the wrong number of limbs. Yep. I don't care if that's how they evolved; it's the wrong number.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just always just the wrong one.
Right. Now, some things that are fun about these creatures, they have an ability called Bone Tracker. their scent, their ability to, they have scent, right? They can smell things and detect things by smell. But it is as accurate as their vision, but only at the listed range for creatures that have taken damage by their venom within the last hour.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have poisoned you, they can smell you as accurately as like you could see.
Yeah,
for 1 hour.
Just puts the tracker, got the stank on you.
It's true, you got the stank. They get reactive strike, which means that if you do a thing that would trigger an attack of opportunity in first edition Pathfinder, these guys will take it on.
With one of their odd number of limbs.
It's true, because they've got like, I need to be clear that they have like, they're quadrupeds, and then they have two arms just hanging off the side.
Yeah, it's like, actually an even like. Number, but they're six limbs.
Yes.
They look like synapsids, like Dimetrodon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, they have a melee bite attack and a ranged venom spit. That ranged venom spit has a 40-foot increment, which is pretty hard.
Pretty
and
real.
If they hit you with it, it does acid damage plus 1d6 persistent acid damage, which basically means you take a d6 every turn until, you know, you have to roll a what's called a flat check, which is you roll a d20 with no bonuses, and you have to beat a certain number to make the acid go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you also get exposed to their venom. Which is a DC 21 fortitude save that lasts up a maximum of 4 rounds. And how that works is that you have to make fortitude saves against this venom. And as you fail, you take effects based on like your stage goes up, kind of
like your tracks, like in first.
Yeah. Season. Yeah. Yeah. You could get a maximum of up to stage 3. It lasts for 4 rounds, which means if you're super unluckers, you could take the stage 3 effects twice,
mm-hmm.
but then it'll end. The first time it's d6 acid damage and enfeebled for 1 round, then it's d8 acid damage and enfeebled 2 for 1 round at stage 2. Enfeebled is like you take the number and subtract it from basically anything strength related. And the last stage is 1d10 acid damage, enfeebled 2, and drained for 1 round. Drained is like it's basically the equivalent of a negative level.
Mm-mm.
It just only lasts for 1 round instead of being like your entire life, like Peter after he died on Saturday.
Yeah, so you get to redo all your math, yay.
Yeah. And then they also have an ability called Scree Strider. They ignore difficult terrain caused by rubble, sand on an even ground made out of earth and stone.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. Apparently they're solar powered. Each of these has like a little like sidebar that gives extra information about it that didn't fit in the main paragraph. It says that their mineral protrusions are filled with tiny reflective compounds that store energy and provide additional substance. It seems like some crest eaters given readily access to sunlight in vast fields of bone are said to gorge themselves to excess, becoming truly immense and territorial. And it's believed that several bone fields on Old Kasath are guarded by these vast guardians who have become local legends to Kasathas who remain behind.
Mm.
Pretty cool.
Like Dimetrodons with their sails.
Yeah. They just eat all the things. There's an ooze in this book. What do you think about oozes?
You know, I don't like that I can't crit them.
It's true.
I want to crit them.
I know. They it is the death of the critical hit.
Yeah.
And these are called ferroflu oozes. They are basically like oozes that are just made out of liquid iron.
Mm-hmm.
So you really can't crit these, I think. I don't know. I'd have to look up what the ooze trait does. I don't remember.
It probably no criticals.
I could look it up, though. I could have the power.
No, that's okay. We still have plenty of monsters.
We do. We can look up real things. And actually, I did look it up because I'm quick, and they are immune to mental effects and precision damage. So they're immune to, like, rogue sneak attack, but they're not immune to critical hits.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, so they're a little bit less terrible to fight.
Yay.
Yeah, so they have an ability called Magnetic Sense, where they can detect large sources of magnetic metal, meaning bulk one or greater, which is basically like a square cube of it, as a precise sense within 100 feet. So, like, I'm sure most of your armor counts. Like, it's just like, oh, we're coming. Here comes the ooze. They have an ability called Demagnetization, where if they take fire damage, their magnetic field ability turns off until their next turn. And they can't, most of their magnetic based abilities fail. So if you hit them with fire, then they can't magnetize anymore because they're just too liquidy.
That's what happens with real metal. You hit the critical point where it stops becoming magnetic.
Yeah.
Also, you can just get the powers of this monster by holding a large magnet.
It's true. Their magnetic field ability is an aura with 30 feet range. A ferrofluid ooze is surrounded by a constant magnetic field that interferes with nearby technological equipment. Items with the tech trait used within the aura take a -1 circumstance penalty to all checks made using them. Unattended metal objects in the area of one bulk or less are pulled adjacent to the ooze. Pretty cool. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
They also have the ability where they can attach themselves to metal creatures, kind of like the attachability of creatures, like almost like a Sturge kind of a thing. It doesn't really do damage, but the target is the condition is called Off Guard. It used to be called Flat Footed, but Wizards of the Coast took Flat Footed away, and you'll like your Off Guard. Thank you so much. I think it's fine. Off Guard is a better name. And then they also have a Magnetic Leap ability, where they basically just jump to something that their sense can detect. That's like enough magnet. They just go boom.
Oh.
Yeah, I like that. Don't ask me to do that sound effect again. Also, don't remove that. That sound effect needs to live forever on our No Direction. What is that? The thing where we put the podcast and people listen to it.
Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah, the something 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 feed.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Speaking of things that you got, how about a glass serpent? You want a glass serpent?
That sounds like a battle mech.
It does.
Like, there's a battle mech called the Glass Spider, and it reminds me of that.
Yeah. So glass serpents apparently are cosmic, which means they're immune to, like, all that radiation, cosmic rays, and they can breathe in space because they're glass and they're made of serpents. They're also huge. They're as big as an elephant.
Oh, that's very big. That is one that you did not send me a picture of.
I didn't send you a picture of the glass serpent? Nope. All right. You need to imagine with your minds, dear readers. And I guess if you're listening to this on that blank, blank, blank feed, you already are imagining with your minds. It is like a towering green and serpent that's very shiny and has like protrusions coming out of its mouth that look like smaller snakes. And it's just ready to be a glass serpent. my players don't ask me for descriptions anymore.
I see. I wonder why. I'm gonna go to the Tashari. That's a cool picture. Good.
That's fair. So it's got an ability called Ravenous Invisibility. It is naturally invisible until it takes a hostile action. Basically, all of its glass reflects its surroundings, and if it takes a hostile action, it becomes visible. But until then. It says a glass serpent that has swallowed a creature becomes visible for the next day as its meal is digested. That's good. I like that. They also have like a reaction where they can ambush you. They make an attack if something walks by them and they don't notice. I appreciate that. They've got an ability called Concealing Coil, where if their last action was to strike you with their tail whip, the glass serpent hit is concealed from all creatures except the glass serpent, which basically means they can wrap you in their tail and you just disappear and nobody can target. Have fun getting heals now. I guess you need the Vitality Network.
Yeah.
They also can swallow whole. The rupture is 12, which means you need to do 12 damage to it in order to break free.
Yeah,
cut yourself out of that.
Doable.
Yeah, it's fair. It's not a wild creature. It's CR5, you know? It's good. Good time. It doesn't even have any resistances to damage. So, like, just cut yourself out. You could do it. Yeah, I believe it.
Bring a knife. A bigger knife.
A big knife. But things that aren't very big. Also, James and I don't really care for this creature. It's Glitch Glemmon.
The Glitch Glemmon.
Did I give you a Glitch Glemmon picture?
Of course you did.
Oh, I just skipped. Usually skipped it, though, because the laser wolf is cooler, right?
Well, yeah, I was just using a placeholder.
Yeah. Listen, this monster is fine. There's no reason to hate it. I don't even hate it. It's just, I've played a lot of Starfinder adventure paths. I've played Dead Suns. I played Horizons of the Bast. We did a little bit of Attack of the Swarm. We did what was the creepy Zonkuthon one called? Signal Screams?
Signal Screams. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And James and I did a little bit of Aeon Throne with Vanessa on our awesome podcast, Stellar. And in all of those except Signal of Screams, we fought Glitch Gremlins, and just like, I'm numb to them. I'm numb.
Yep, they're just kind of annoying.
Yeah. Speaking of things that these guys can do that are annoying, they have digital telepathy, which basically means that they can attempt computers checks to access any computer within their telepathy's range. They can also sense items and creatures that have the tech trait within 100 feet. They have a glitch aura that creatures and items with the tech trait struggle to function reliably when near a Glitch Gremlin. They have to, each round they start their turn inside the Glitch Gremlin's aura, which is a 20-foot aura, they have to attempt a DC 16 will saving throw. If they get a critical success, nothing happens to them and they are immune to the aura for 1 minute. If they get a regular success, that creature or the item is unaffected. If they get a failure, they are glitching one. And if they critically fail, they're glitching two. And glitching two has like its own list of things in the book. I'm not going to read it. It's a fair amount of rules. Just know that it means that you're going to have a bad time with that item.
Yeah.
They have a climb speed of and a regular speed of 20 feet. It's interesting because like in the art, he kind of looks like he's flying and he can't fly. So maybe he's just like jumping like sideways.
Yeah, he's,
I'm not sure.
He's just jump strafing. He's trying to T-pose to break your morale.
Definitely. He's got Delete and Thunderstrike as first level spells. Thunderstrike is kind of like a zap reflex save or you take damage spell. They have Electric Arc, Figment, and Recharge Weapon as first rank cantrips, which is pretty, or as cantrips at first rank, which is pretty cool. They can also do a ranged unstable spark attack, and they also have a bite. My one thing here is like, do they really need a first level spell and a cantrip and an innate ranged electric attack? That's a lot of electricity. It's kind of boring. I feel like you don't need Electric Arc. I mean, I guess unless you specifically want to target reflex saves forever, but eh.
It's just a mascot creature. They get a lot. It's a lot to run for a creature that ultimately is just meant to be killed like a rat.
It's true, because they are level minus one, and they have a measly 8 hit points.
Yep.
You're not wrong. Yep. Killed like a rat.
It's a lot of effort to kill a rat.
True. Now let's look over here at the best part. A laser wolf.
Yeah, let's go.
Laser Wolf. One thing to note is like it's got its name, like the Tashtari, in like parentheses. And I'm pretty sure in Alien Archive 2 is where they were printed. And I think it was the other way around where they were called Tashtari. And then it's like, these are also called Laser Wolves. And like, listen, the Starfighter team knows that if you have a really boring scientific name and a really accurate, apt, and evocative general public name, the general public name is better. Laser Wolf. Laser Wolf.
I mean, that's why we have the Bobbit Worm.
It's true.
Yeah.
Now, there are actually two stat blocks here. There's a Tashtari and a Tashtari Alpha. They have dark vision. The Alpha also has low light vision. I don't know why the regular one can't see in low light, but only dark. That's weird.
No, you can see in color.
It's true. It's true. They have basic wolf stats. Wolf stats are you have a jaws attack that does knockdown.
Mm-hmm.
Their shooting of their laser beam is called a muzzle beam. I love it. It's very good. It's a 60-foot range that fires. It does a D6 plus 4 fire damage plus 1D4 persistent fire, which means the laser is good enough that it always catches you on fire if it hits you.
Nice.
And if you are a Alpha Tashtari, it's a D6 fire damage with a D6 persistent fire instead of a D4.
Ooh.
Pretty good. They also have an ability called Bristle Flesh. The filaments in their mouth like bristle with light, and it creates an emanation that creatures within it have to make a fortitude save. It will basically dazzle you, and that sounds underwhelming to you. I know it does, because you're a Pathfinder first edition player where that's minus one to attack rolls and like perception checks.
Yeah, it's like nothing.
But in second edition, dazzled is also like a 5% chance to like just, because you have to make a flat check, and if you fail the flat check, just you miss. Enjoy. Like, it's actually really nasty. It's like those penalties plus kind of very minor blinded.
Yeah, I mean, all those things, penalties stack, rebuffs don't, right? So at the end of the day, it's all bad.
True. True. The Alpha has an ability called Solar Cry. A searing rainbow erupts from the Teshtari Alpha's mouth as it throws back its head to unleash a powerful muzzle beam that soars into the sky before splitting into a thousand rays of multicolored light that crash down in every direction. Laser Wolf says gay rights. dealing 4d6 fire damage to each non-Teshtari in a 20-foot emanation. DC 19 basic reflex save. A creature that critically fails is dazzled for 1 minute. Other Teshtaris in the area recharge their bristle flash. The Alpha's glowing heat dims and they can't use this ability until they recharge by basking in the sunlight for 1 hour. So literally, if you have a pack of these, the Alpha will recharge the bristle abilities of all the other ones, and it does all this damage to the enemies. And if you critically fail, you are basically like penalized and light blinded for a minute. It's nasty. A pack of these things is not a pleasant thing to encounter.
That's also like a good supervisor, good boss, right? Actually helps, right? You.
Actually helps, unlike most. Speaking of a person who could have used a good boss, the next creature is called a Nihili. Nihilis are from the original Alien Archive, if I'm recalling correctly. It's basically a corpse that is animated from the terror of dying in a vacuum.
But yeah, like dying alone in space.
Yes. They are scary. There's actually this really nice bit of lore on them in like the sidebar called The Last Gasp, where it talks about how how in like our real world spacesuits we have like tethers to tie people to the International Space Station so that they can breathe, and also so they're connected, they don't wander off. Mm-hmm. Those tethers in Starfinder universe are called the Last Gasp because it was intended as a backup in the event that a communication was severed, so that the person, they can try to talk to the person either to make sure that they're actually dead and not a Nihili, mm-hmm. or so that they wouldn't be alone when they died out in space and wouldn't become a Nihili.
Aw, that is sweet.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of nice. It shows that, like, there is a healthy fear of these creatures in the Starfinder universe. It's a CR5 monster with the undead, void, and cosmic traits. It can speak Necrol, so dying teaches it a new language. Pretty cool.
Great.
This one has a tactical laser rifle with an advanced battery. And it has an ability called Decompressing Glance, where a creature within 30 feet that they can see starts its turn. They can trigger the reaction. That creature has to make a DC 20 fortitude save, and if it fails, it's fatigued for 1 minute as it struggles to catch its breath, as like its breath is pulled out of its body by this creature.
Mm. Yeah. I always like them. I did recently learn that they do a lot of off-tether activities out there, which is just horrifying to me. But apparently it's just the tether gets in the way when you're doing like repairs on the ISS.
Yeah, that terrifying.
Brave people.
So freaking brave. They have an ability called Decompressing Gaze, where they could stare at a creature that they could see within 30 feet, and that creature has to make a will save. And if it fails, it is affected by Decompressing Glance if it was not already fatigued. If it's fatigued, a failed save causes the creature to begin suffocating until the Nihili's next turn. The creature remains conscious and can take actions on its turn, such as casting a spell or searching for a source of air. The creature can hold its breath on normal. And it can try a new will save at the end of its turn to break free from the experience being projected into its mind. On a success, the effect of Decompressing Gaze end. And it can either end the gaze on its turn or as a free action. The targeted creature's access to air is restored when it targets a new creature, or if the creature successfully resists the effects. Otherwise, this follows the rule for suffocation. Meaning, basically, you are suffocating every round that it looks at you and you don't pass your saving throw.
Yep, just go down. Go to sleep.
Yeah, go to sleep and die. It also has an ability called Gravity Grab, where it can make a field of gravity that pulls creatures and unsecured objects to it.
Okay, sure, whatever.
Just pull it out of the ship so you can get lost in space with it.
Yeah, kind of weird, but whatever.
Yeah. The next one is Squaxes. I wrote the original one of this in Starfinder Alien Archive 2. They're called the Volkariki as their plural version of like their Castravelian name, but everybody calls them Squaxes because they look like a combination of squirrel and fox. I like them. They are very good. Hopefully they don't wait too long to make the Volkarisu playable in Starfinder 2nd Edition. Wink. That means nothing. I don't know anything.
Isn't there intelligence -4?
Yes, these are, but the Volkarisu are like... They're kind of like how Tengu look like crows, but they're not crows. The Volcarisu look like Squaxes, but aren't Squaxes. They're actually intelligent. These guys have intelligence minus four. They're animals. There are two types. There's a regular Squax, which is a level one creature, and there's a trained Squax, which is a level zero creature. There's also rules for taking a Squax as a combat companion, which is basically like an animal companion. I imagine Starfinder is going to have its own rules for how this works. The statistics, the way that it's presented, look more like an animal companion rather than like a familiar. So I'm actually pretty excited to see what they do. However, it says that they're uncommon, so I guess your GM needs to give you permission to have them. Now, the base ability that they all get is called Squax Tricks. They have like a Jaws attack. They have 7 hit points. They're not really all that dangerous. But they have a Tricks ability where they could disarm and trip creatures with its tail using acrobatics instead of athletics. In Pathfinder for 2nd Edition and soon Starfinder, instead of having combat maneuver rolls, you use skills to do those types of things. And most people have to use athletics to like grab or trip or whatever. The Squax can do it with acrobatics for disarm and trip attempts. And it can do it even if it doesn't have a free hand, which is cool because they don't have free hands.
I mean, it uses the tail, right?
Yeah, exactly. It can attempt to disarm or trip off-guard creatures up to 2 sizes larger than it and gains a +2 circumstance bonus to disarm or trip an off-guard creature. So that's pretty cool because normally you would need like the Titan Mauler feat in order to do that. They basically have Titan Mauler for those two actions. Pretty cool.
How do you get things off guard?
Flanking.
Okay.
Or also acting in a surprise rep.
Okay.
It's pretty easy. Off guard is like one of the easiest conditions to inflict on somebody.
Okay.
Now, the other one is called Trained Squax. I imagine that this is a stat block for somebody that has a companion, but you're not using the companion rules because that's annoying for an NPC. It has, in addition to having that ability I just read, Squax Tricks, it has the wonderfully named Go for the Eyes! Exclamation point. It is a mental ability that takes 2 actions. The Squax strides, attempts an acrobatics check against an adjacent creature's perception DC, and then makes a Jaws strike. So it gets to make 3 actions for 2. It's good action economy. On a critical success thrown by the Squax's leap, the target is off guard until the end of the Squax's next turn. On a success, the target is momentarily startled and is off guard until the end of the Squax's current turn. And on a critical failure, the Squax misjudges its distance to the target's face and falls prone.
Okay, so it can give the off guard condition as well.
Yeah, so a trained one can make you off guard and then do all those terrible things to you. This is funny because I took my dog out for the walk and I was going to throw his poop away, and I heard like some rustling on the other side of our fence as I'm like opening the trash can, and then all of a sudden this squirrel just like jumps off of the the fence like this and just like stares at me like. And I just look at it and it like lands and then skitters away. And then I turn over and its buddy is on the front and his buddy is like looking at me. And I'm like, yo, and it just leaves. And I'm like, cool. And like, that's what I think of when I think of the Squax rolling a 1, just. Now, things that won't roll a natural 1 against you. The Swarm.
Yeah. You sent me that one.
I know. You have the pages up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The first one kind of looks like a trilobite. The second one looks like my nightmares.
The second one looks like an assassin bug.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one on the page with the stat blocks, right? That's the one I was thinking of. It kind of looks like the trilobite. The trilobite is PA's like state fossil. I don't know if you knew we had a state fossil, but we do.
Oh, of course we do.
We're a very strange state. The other one on the first page, that to me looks like just like a traditional Zergy type of creature, and that's appropriate because the Swarm is essentially the Starfinder version of like Tyranids or like the Zerg in Starcraft. Like, this is what they are.
Or Terminids and Helldivers, you know.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that I find very interesting, and they note on this page, is that the creatures that belong to the Swarm don't have the Swarm trait, because the Swarm trait is for like groups of hundreds of creatures that are like acting as a single thing, like a swarm of bats or a swarm of cockroaches. So instead, they gave the Swarm like an original species name called the Kuchar. So like that is officially the name of what these guys were before they became the Swarm and what they kind of still are. This is what the Sharon broke away from. Mm-hmm. I think it was a good idea to give them an official species name like that, but calling them the Swarm is perfectly cool, and I like that. Compared to every single other stat block in this book, this one has a full page of lore about Swarm history and how it impacts the Pack Worlds. This is probably a good bit of background information for anyone who is coming from second edition Pathfinder and who has never played Starfinder before, because the Swarm are very influential in Starfinder's lore, wouldn't you say, James?
Yeah, no, I wonder if that's any hints for what you're going to see in Starfinder 2 early on.
I wonder too. That would be very interesting. It talks a lot about different types of, like, how the Swarm is used. Like, one of the points is, in recent years, the Swarm has been little more than a distant boogeyman with no activities save for classified actions in the Suscalon system. That's our adventure path that we aren't playing anymore.
That went bad real fast.
Yeah, that went bad real fast. Let me tell you that the entire first book is a very hasty retreat. It's fun. I enjoyed that book. So now there are two examples of Swarm creatures here. The first one is called the Amangant, and the second one is called the Bastarox. The Amangant is a level 3 creature. I imagine that is the little assassin bug looking guy. Mm-hmm. And then the Bastarox is probably the really big, cool looking guy who's level 6. They have a lot of cool abilities. Both of them have an ability called Swarm Mind, which is very similar to Swarm Mind in Starfinder First Edition. Mm-hmm. It basically means that, like, they get, if they have other Swarm nearby, their will saving throws use a better result, which is nasty. And the Amangant has an ability called Burrowing Reveal, where if it starts burrowed, it can use its reaction to emerge from the ground. Before it rolls initiative, it can burrow, and then it basically, like, if it's underground at the start of the initiative, it can pop out as a reaction, which is pretty cool. I don't really understand. It says the emerging creature knows this creature burrows. This movement must cause it to emerge from the ground. I don't understand what this ability is supposed to do, though. Because, like, it looks almost like it's supposed to be, like, some sort of action, but it basically just says it notices the creature and burrows before it rolls initiative. This movement must cause it to emerge from the ground. Maybe it's just, like, a burrow up to its speed that it can do beforehand. I don't really understand what this is supposed to
do. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like it burrows and then gets closer to you before you roll initiative.
Yeah. It has an ability called Coordinated Digestion. If the Amangant strikes a creature with its acidic mouth cannon and that creature was already taking persistent acid damage, you increase the damage die of its persistent damage by one step up to a maximum of 1d8. So what that means is that it's got an acid mouth cannon where it shoots a d8 plus 2 acid damage and 1d4 persistent acid damage. If it keeps shooting you multiple times, it'll go from a d4 persistent damage to a d6 to a d8 up to a maximum of d8, which means the acid just gets worse. Mm-hmm. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. You'd get digested faster. The Bastarox and that big silly arm it has on the first page, that's actually a shield arm. It functions like a shield, so it can, like, raise a shield and block to protect itself. It gives stats for, like, its break threshold and hardness and stuff. And if the shield is destroyed, it takes a -2 penalty to attack rolls made with its battering arm strike. And the shield arm will regenerate over time. So if it breaks, it'll, like, regrow in 24 hours.
Oh, man, that's a hyper crayfish.
Yeah, it's a super crayfish. It's got a battering arm with the shove trait, so it can push you with its battering arm. It does 2d6 plus 6 bludgeoning damage. So that is the equivalent of a great sword in Pathfinder. Enjoy. And its arm blade, its other arm is called an arm blade. It's an agile 10-foot reach weapon that can also be used for piercing damage. It does 2d8 plus 8 slashing. And it can shoot a bioelectric jolt at you, which is kind of like, it's not quite a lightning bolt because it only, oh no, it's a 30-foot line. So it's like half the size of a lightning bolt that it can do at will.
Cool. Okay, weird. Okay, cool, I guess.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Weird, but cool.
It's just like a Magus now.
Yeah. Listen, everything has electric damage because everyone fears Ocho. They know it's the only way to stop Ocho.
I just think in the future everyone has tasers.
Right. Speaking of things that have tasers, security robots. There are two here. There's an observer class and a protection class. As it sounds like, the one that is a observer class is really good at perception, and it kind of doesn't have a lot of stats. It's got a pistol that it shoots you.
It probably just makes a noise to let somebody know that it's being shot at, right?
Yes, warning. Warning. It doesn't even have that as ability. So I just imagine just stretch out.
Just shoots into the air. Bang, bang, bang. This is the danger pistol. I'm in danger.
Exactly. And then the protection class robot has a better gun. It actually has a rifle. And it has a covering posture. So it could basically give cover to its allies. So this sounds like a bodyguard robot. It's a protection class robot. So like, if you're in danger, it's Orisa. Get behind me.
Oh, I mean, that's what a protective robot should do.
Yeah. Granted, Orisa looks way cooler than this one does, but that's okay. It's hard to compete with, what was her name? Yuffie? Luffy? What was the name of the little girl who made Orisa?
Effie.
Yeah. It's hard to compete with her awesome design aesthetics.
I don't know. I like this. This kind of looks like, kind of reminds me of, like, if you made a robot Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, just minus an arm. Like that top heavy.
Yeah. It looks like it's in that same, like, Chris Jackson art style.
Yeah.
It also notes that this robot is Abadar Corp approved. I don't think that's a good thing.
You know, if it's protecting you, it's probably a great thing.
True. And then the last creature here. Wow, we did good. It's like almost an hour on the nose. Look
at
that.
I know.
The last creature here is a cybernetic zombie. There's a whole list of different robot abilities and tech abilities. So kind of like showing that these creatures are like changeable based on the types of encounters
you want.
Would
you say
they're like
plug
that.
And play?
They're plug and play! the cybernetic zombie presented here has cybernetics. You can actually turn off its cybernetics with a disabled device or disable a systems check. So you can use...
That's just rude.
Yeah, either thievery or computers to just turn off its
stuff. That's just rude. My man got an egg beater. Everybody else got the good cybernetics. You're turning off his egg beater.
But you might actually be helping him because the one that's presented here, his cybernetic ability is called self-destruct.
Is it ruder to end the unlife? I don't know. I'm not a philosopher.
Like, he's like, I'm Mr. Meeseeks. Look at me.
I mean, I guess if you build a zombie, you kind of want it to do as much damage as possible. I get it.
Yeah, I get it too. It says it must use its and this is the best part. It says a cybernetic zombie must use its reaction to self-destruct unless its cybernetics are disabled.
Yeah, I guess if it's in a small room, you better get your hacker person to turn off the explosion.
Yeah, it says it triggers when the cybernetic zombie is reduced to 0 hit points. The cybernetic zombie's cybernetics explode, dealing D8 electricity damage in a 10-foot radius, DC 15 basic reflex save. This ability destroys any technological items on the zombie. Malu!
I mean, I know when we had those guys that turn in the acid, which we could turn off their acid.
That was good.
Yeah.
Oh, you could turn that off? I melted for no reason?
No, you wish you could.
Oh yeah, I did. I really did. Man, those puddles suck.
Yep.
And then it also has a fist. It can punch you with its undead fist and an integrated commercial laser, which you can see in the art where its arm is just a laser that it shoots you with. I approve.
Yeah. We're giving zombies range weapons, but okay.
Yeah. And then the last page is a nice, helpful little notice of all the people who made Starfinder Second Edition and Paizo products in general possible.
Oh, you didn't send me that, but that's fine. I think we know who
they are. No, I would never do that. You don't need that. That's just the orc license and like the who made this product. We know.
Thank you for not making me include that in the slideshow.
No, I would never. So now let's talk a little bit about this book. Obviously, you've had it secondhand from me. Mm-hmm. I have read it. Based on what I went over, what are your thoughts of somebody who doesn't really play the second edition reaction system?
I feel like a lot of this stuff that was in the first game was retained. Which is, I think, an important step to making it an experience that wants to be played. I think, once again, Grinchy Lemons have too many things, and maybe there's a lot of options here and a lot of choice for somebody that's like new to the 2E system, but probably just one of those get good flags, right?
Yeah, I would say the stat blocks look pretty comparable to second edition. They're pretty short, which is good. A lot of information is crammed in a relatively small space. It's not quite Cypher system, like in terms of like being in a sidebar, but it's pretty good. I like that how well they managed to really.
Oh, I forgot to give the warning of thunderstorms are rolling through our area. So
you can't argue that they're not ubiquitous with the system at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So I in general think that things are good. A lot of these creatures felt very familiar. For me, knowing how second edition works means that like I can look at this and be like, yeah, this is a good translation to 2e. And then like running and playing a lot of Starfinder, I can go, yeah, these creatures work the way that I would expect these to work. I think that these are good. I enjoy them. I'm excited to see what they do with more content like this. I think that overall, it's going, a lot of people are going to find that the system plays differently, but feels the same, which, you know, ultimately it's going to depend on which system feels better for you and your table, you know?
Yeah. I have a feeling maybe in the first part of Pathfinder second edition, a lot of things gave conditions at low levels. So in addition to having to know everything you do, you're always having to track new things happening to you when you're still not comfortable. It seems like there's less of that with this intro. With these intro monsters, there's just more base stuff that you can learn your own character before having to start doing more math to figure out what's good and what's bad, which is once again very helpful.
Yeah. I definitely think that Starfinder second edition is going to benefit from the fact that Pathfinder second edition kind of came out swinging and had kind of a steep curve to learning all the new things if you were coming from an old system. Mm-hmm. I still expect there to be like, oh man, it worked like this in this system and that in that system, and now I'm confused. Like, that always happens when you're jumping to a new edition. But like this feels like things are on the right power level, but also aren't too crazy complicated. I think that putting complexity in the players' hands in their decisions is better than putting it in the monsters at low levels. Yeah. I think monsters should probably get more complex as you get higher level.
Oh, 100%.
I'm happy. I like it. Looks pretty cool. Very neat book. The only thing about these is I always get sad because like if I like the other free RPG product is a Pathfinder second from Paizo is a Pathfinder second edition one where it's like a little adventure where everybody plays a poppet and that you are toys that have to protect a toy store essentially.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like the adventures better because I feel like they hold on to their value in the sense that like I can use that forever. Like once the Alien Archive comes out, I don't really need this. This just becomes a collector's item to me. So yeah. I kind of wish that we got to see an adventure with like some context, because you could have put some creatures in that and then also like shown me what a second edition Starfinder adventure should look like. But don't know. We'll see a bunch of those in a couple months, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You know, it's a slightly missed opportunity, but on the scale of opportunities to be missed, super low.
Yeah. Indeed. So, I mean, we're at the end of the show now, so thanks for tuning in, everybody. I hope you enjoyed our review of Starfinder Second Contact. James and I are still talking about what we're going to do for the July episode, because as you know, for the last 4 or 5 months, James and I have been doing this show on the last Wednesday of every single month. And so that last Wednesday is going to be like a week or two before Gen Con.
Yeah.
So like, what are we going to have to talk about that isn't right before the shiny new thing comes out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also don't want to rush an episode like the day that Starfinder Second Edition comes out, because I don't know about you, James, but I feel like we're gonna need some time to actually like sit down with the system and like look at it before we do a show.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's fine to give kind of like what do you call it, like feet to the ground, like immediate reactions to things, but I mean, since we're only once a month, I mean, we don't want to do that and then have to come back the next show and actually look into it. It's like, we might as well just do our due diligence before making a show about it.
You know what we could do? We could do, like, the best of first edition. We should do a first edition send-off.
Ooh.
I don't know what that'll look like yet. but that's what we should do. Because, like, we're usually news reviews and interviews. But maybe this time, we won't do any of that. And we'll just... we'll do our go beyond salute the entire episode, but to first edition. Because I mean, like first edition is kind of over with Mechageddon being out, but like I'd say with the playtest rulebook coming out, like this is the official. I mean, it's not the official end because I'm sure there's still going to be Starfinder Society scenarios and stuff, but like it's kind of the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. We could put stuff together. We can, I have a couple ideas of certain things that might be fun for that.
Oh my gosh, maybe since I had the book and therefore I was in charge of this episode, maybe we'll put you in charge of the next episode. You'll get to do whatever you want to send off Starfinder, so first edition.
Oh yeah,
absolute power for James.
Oh, I'm gonna make it rude. Let's figure it out.
Make sure you ask Ryan. We don't want to get in trouble. Or
Oh, no,
either
no.
that or get like a.
It'll be PG. And I want to say, before you ruin it, I'm going to say that you have gone this entire show without cursing. I am so
I
proud of
did
you.
it!
I'm so proud of you. I don't have to edit anything at this point. Thank you.
I did it. I almost dropped an F-bomb in celebration.
I know. There was a guy. I knew it. I knew it. It's wired into you.
You said, don't say anything. And then I was like, okay. And then you're like, you went the entire show without cursing. And I was like, I'm sorry, everybody. My day job has me work with kids all day. So like, by the end of the day, sometimes it's nice to talk to adults and get to be a sailor. You know what I mean? But that's okay.
Look, the no cursing thing is a holdover from the original No Direction. And now that I have a child, it is nice to be able to listen to something and not have to worry about the language content when your kids are around. I get it.
That's why you're the editor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us on No Direction Beyond. If you want more No Direction content, make sure to go to nodirectionpodcast.com, where a lot of our fun, I guess, conspirators in crime,
the conspirators.
Fellow bloggers,
yeah,
I don't know.
Other
a
talents,
lot of,
other people that make the game.
Yeah, a lot of our friends who help make Pathfinder and Starfinder write awesome blog articles and post their stuff and the things they do. You can read all about it over on the site. And it's a good roundup for what No Direction is doing at a given time. Obviously, we're on Discord. If you go to nodirectionpodcast.com, there's like a big link that you can click and join us on Discord. We hang out and are chill, and we chat with people when people want to talk about stuff. The Starfinder section's been kind of quiet because we're all just sort of sitting here twiddling our thumbs waiting for second edition. But I imagine once second edition comes out, we're going to be like, yeah, time to talk.
Yeah, time to tear this thing apart. Let's go.
It's time to rip it to shreds and throw it into Dustin's face.
Oh, no, he's working hard. Be nice to
he's
Dustin.
Trying. He's like, I'm well, see, the thing is, it's got to be Dustin because Dustin will, like, he'll go, oh, that's really funny, guys. Thirsty will just stare at me, and then I'll just feel the void damage erupting across my body under his gaze. And then if I throw it at Jenny, she's just going to stomp me with a mech.
Yeah.
So like,
no sass.
Yeah. Zero sass, just death.
Yeah.
So Dustin, you're going to get the stuff thrown at you. It'll be good. We've decided. Also, like, I know Mike Kimmel's on the team, but we've never had Mike on the show. And I feel like I feel like we've had Shay once for like a special like news on Starfinder Society, but like we haven't had Shay on in forever.
Yeah.
So like I think that once we get some of the review stuff done with Starfinder Second Edition coming out, like the playtest book, I think at that point we're probably going to try to shoot out and get some interviews and have people talk about cool stuff and whatever. But for now, we're doing all this stuff for you because I was going to do the Go Beyond, but that's a really bad transition.
Well, if you had a better transition, you could.
Go Beyond?
Mm-hmm.
With No Direction?